All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Options Discovery. Today, I have a very special guest here, the Chief Executive Officer at Matrix Executions, Jordan Naylor. Thanks for coming on.
Hello, Alex. Thanks very much for having me. Very excited about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation as well. It's been a long time in the making talking to Paulina at OIC, your marketing director, and just kind of getting this set up, which was awesome. And I know we have a video coming out with Alan Greenberg, the Chief Operating Officer at Matrix. So it's great to have the whole team on. So let's start off with just introduce yourself and give us a quick rundown of your educational and career path and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity, Alex. And, you know, for starters, as Alex mentioned, I'm Jordan Naylor, CEO at Matrix. I started in the business back in the mid-90s. I went to school at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and my fellow alumni, Alex, is interviewing me now, which is fantastic. Congrats, Alex. And I majored in finance and economics there. For me, it was a great experience, primarily because of the location of the school. So I was very close to the Loop, very close to the Chicago Financial District. So it really exposed me to some really tremendous internship opportunities. So very early on, I was able to intern at Payne Webber, worked for a big broker there and helped automate spreadsheets and, you know, portfolio position reports for his large high net worth clients and so forth. That was a great experience. And a little bit later on, I interned for one of Tony Saliba's companies called International Trading Institute, or ITI. And that company was amazing. So basically, they trained international students on how to make markets and options. So I was able to work with some really amazing instructors, one of which is Joe Corona, who's with us today at Matrix as our Chief Strategy Officer. Great to be, you know, working with Joe again. But that was a great experience that really, really got me hooked on options. It just, you know, you learn to live and breathe options going through ITI courses over and over again. So that really set me down the path of, you know, a desire to do everything options. From there, I really started getting more on the technology side. So, you know, development for different option trading tools. We developed auto quoters for like the Australian options market when it went electronic in 97, built volatility management programs, position management programs, and eventually built full trading systems while at Liquid Point in the 2000s. And that was another company that Tony Saliba had founded. I was there until about 2014. Then I moved on and worked at the SIBO on a next generation matching engine for a period of time. I left SIBO and started my own software company. And then a couple years later, I rejoined forces with Tony and we launched Matrix. So that's, you know, a little bit of a career path and education history and how I got to where I am today.
Yeah, well, super interesting. It seems like you kind of bounced around all over the place within the industry, and it's been a pretty interesting journey to hear about. So one thing I want to just kind of introduce as well is, well, what is Matrix Executions and what is your responsibilities as the CEO?
Yeah, great. Thanks for asking. So Matrix Executions is an agency-only broker-dealer. We provide execution services to institutional and broker-dealer clients, and we specialize in equity and options trading. So we have a tremendous team of highly experienced individuals that, you know, like I learned in my early days at ITI, live and breathe options. So everybody at our company loves options. We have best-in-class technology stack. It's all developed in-house, primarily in Chicago. Most of our engineers work out of our headquarter office at the Chicago Board of Trade building. And we work very closely with clients to deliver custom solutions to meet their unique workflow needs and execution needs. So the combination of our deep experience with our staff and our amazing technology staff, we're able to, you know, work very closely with clients to deliver customized solutions for them. Some more specifics about what our capabilities are. We obviously have robust electronic routing capabilities. We have execution algos for all different types of orders, single leg orders, complex orders, you know, multi-leg orders, tied orders with a leg stock component as one of the legs, crossing orders where firms are committing capital and executing crosses electronically or through our floor brokerage operations. We have auto hedging capabilities, liquidity sourcing, and more, all in our electronic trading platform. We also have high touch execution services through our box floor brokerage team, and recently launched at the beginning of this year, our SIBO floor brokerage team as well, in addition to a sales trading desk that operates out of our headquarters at the Board of Trade building. And our support and coverage desk is also, you know, operating out of our headquarters as well. So that's high level, kind of the breadth of services that we offer out to our clients and, you know, who we are and where we are. As you mentioned, I'm the CEO at Matrix. I work very closely with all of the teams, you know, sales, technology, operations, and others on really determining what to set our priorities to be and what the strategic direction of our firm should be based on, you know, input from everybody. Obviously, we have input from prospects, from existing clients. We have technology challenges that need to be addressed and optimized. We have input from our operations team and our floor brokerage team. So we basically take all of that together and come to consensus on what the right direction is and form our strategic direction and move forward and execute.
Wow. Yeah, that is really interesting. And I definitely want to dive into the technology and services in the later part when we talk more about Matrix. But I appreciate the introduction and kind of giving the audience a little bit of an intro on who you are and your experiences and what Matrix does. So this episode is going to be about dividends and the effect of corporate actions essentially on options. And so let's just start it off with the pretty basic high level question, right? Whenever we see a company announce its dividend, we generally think, well, if they're paying out a dividend, we're going to see some sort of drop in the stock commensurate to whatever dividend that they're paying. So how do options prices change when a dividend is announced?
Well, yeah, so that's a very, very good question. And it's important for people who are trading options to understand this. So the one first assumption is, and this is generally true, all other things equal, on the day a stock goes X dividend, the stock price will drop by the amount of the dividend that was paid. Again, all things being equal, there could be news on that day, it could go in the opposite direction, so on and so forth. But so assuming that the stock drops the amount of the dividend on the X dividend date, basically what you'll see in the options is on the put side, you'll see relatively little change. You'll see a little bit of decay from theta, you know, one extra day of lost, you know, time between the day and expiration. And then you'll also, but otherwise you really won't see much in the put prices because it's really already factored in, priced in that dividend and that stock move. Now on the call side, for the out of the money calls, you'll basically see the same thing, relatively little change. It's already priced it in. But for the in the money calls, you will see a price drop by up to the amount of the dividend, depending on how deep in the money those calls are. And the main reason for that is that prior to the X dividend date, there was the opportunity for call owners to exercise those calls early and basically participate in that dividend. And then once you get to the X dividend date, that opportunity no longer exists. So that premium that was in particular, the deeper in the money calls, goes away because that opportunity is no longer available to an owner of those calls.
Yeah, really interesting. And so we see that a lot with those steep in the money calls. And let's talk about also maybe the effect on the pricing of spreads. So how could a dividend potentially cause a disparity between call and put spread pricing?
That's very interesting. And that gets into some interesting structures. So I think the easiest way to start this conversation is to simplify everything. So let's start off with non-dividend paying, European style, zero interest rate environment. So in that environment, if you're looking at 5-point spreads, you know, call spreads, put spreads, basically, if you're able to buy a call spread for $2, you should be able to sell the corresponding put spread for $3, okay? Those will both have the exact same P&L return. Their little hockey stick chart will look exactly the same. There's no interest rate involved, you know, so there's, it doesn't, if you're putting out $2 or collecting $3, that has no impact on it. Another way to look at that is there's a structure called a box, which is a risk-free structure, which is basically if you buy the call spread and you buy the put spread and it's a 5-point spread, you can buy that for $5. So that's kind of fair value for that structure in this world with European options, no interest rates and no dividends, right? Zero interest rates and no dividends. Now, once you add dividends and American style options to that environment, okay, you will see boxes that can trade above $5. So basically buying that call spread and buying that put spread, the value of those two combined can exceed $5, which, you know, kind of doesn't make sense to a certain extent. So where is that extra value coming from? Well, that extra premium is coming from that early exercise value that those call options have. And in particular, the deeper in the money call option has more early exercise value than the further out of the money call option does. So since we're buying the box, we're buying the call vertical, we're buying the put vertical. Since we're buying the call vertical, that means we're buying the more deeper in the money call and selling the further out of the money call or the higher strike call. So we're buying more of that premium. So that's why that can trade above $5. So if you go back to the first case where, hey, if I can buy this call vertical for $2, I should be able to sell this put vertical for $3. That's no longer true in that environment. And that's generally why.
Yeah. Wow. Really interesting. And I think that's a really good explanation on that phenomenon. And something you mentioned was, right, for American call options, you have that added value because of the decision to early exercise after the dividend is announced before the ex-dividend day. So can you talk about what influences that decision and when it is the correct decision? Because often with options, it's not the correct decision to early exercise, and why that would be the case when a dividend is announced, or potentially why that's the case.
So there are a number of factors that kind of determine whether or not you should or should not exercise a call option just prior to the ex-dividend date. Some of it may be unique to an individual. They may not have enough capital to actually exercise and purchase the stock, for example. So, and it also depends on what kind of interest rates they have, what their margin rates are, maybe different than somebody else's margin rates. So there's a lot of, you know, specificity in determining that. But that said, generally speaking, the deeper in the money a call is, the larger the dividend amount is, and the closer that call expiration date is to the ex-dividend date. Now, obviously, the expiration date has to be after the ex-dividend date for this to make sense, on or after. But the closer it is to that ex-dividend date, all of those three factors would increase the likelihood that you should potentially exercise your call before the ex-dividend date. So to give two extreme examples, just to kind of frame it, if you have a stock that's trading at 100, and let's just say you have a $1 call option, you know, greatest buy of all time. Somebody bought a $1 call option and the stock rallied to 100. Cool. If that option is expiring next week and the company has a dividend that's paying out tomorrow, it goes ex-dividend tomorrow, let's say it's a $5 dividend, you should 100% exercise your option, because you're basically buying the stock at a dollar. You're participating in that $5 dividend tomorrow. If you hold on to that option to expiration, which is a week from now, you'll see no additional benefit as compared to owning the stock at this point, because it's so deep in the money, your optionality has no value. It's trading at intrinsic value. There's no extrinsic value left yet at that point. On the other end of the spectrum, if you have an out of the money option, call option, you should never, ever exercise it prior to an ex-dividend date, because you would just be essentially paying more for the stock than you can in the open market. So if for whatever reason you want to turn that out-of-the-money call into stock, you should just sell that out-of-the-money call and then separately buy the stock.
Yeah, very interesting. And I think the more in the money the option is, the more it makes sense, right, to exercise that option early, as that intrinsic value, that extrinsic value would be less. And so how does the relationship between the moneyness of the option affect, right, that early exercise? I know we kind of just mentioned it, but just to kind of hammer this concept home, right, as we increase that moneyness, or the amount that option is in the money, does that make more sense to early exercise? And how does that relationship between the increase in moneyness and the extrinsic value?
Yeah, so you need to have the intrinsic value, which means it needs to be in the money. If you have zero intrinsic value, by definition, that's an out of the money option. So therefore, it doesn't make sense to exercise ahead of a dividend. The other thing that happens is, as you go further deep in the money on call options, you actually decrease the amount of extrinsic value you have. And sometimes if you're looking at an option chain, it may be a little bit hard to see that when you're looking at in the money options. But for kind of a quick reference, you can look over to the put side of the equation, which if you're looking at in the money call options, that means all the corresponding puts that you're looking at are by definition out of the money. So therefore their prices are 100% extrinsic value. You can kind of see the rate at which that extrinsic value is declining. So generally speaking, if the extrinsic value on the call option that you're contemplating exercising early is less than the dividend amount that you may be foregoing if you don't exercise, then it's quite possibly a candidate for early exercise.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Thank you for that explanation. And so I think we're going to move on to the next part of the question, which is obviously we've been talking a lot about cash dividends, but let's talk about stock dividends or stock splits and how are options typically adjusted to account for stock splits?
So for, I guess we can, if we start with special dividends, so like special cash dividends and special stock dividends, what typically happens with those is if you're an owner of, let's say, the 100 strike calls and a company announces a $10 special stock dividend, special cash dividend, I should say, your strike will actually be adjusted downward to $90. So essentially, your call is being protected from the harm of that dividend, and there's no benefit of, you know, considering an early exercise or what have you. The same is true for a special stock dividend where they additional, you know, they issue X number of additional percentage of stock for everybody. So in those cases, the intention is that there's no impact on option pricing. So the strike is basically adjusted to accommodate for that special action. On other items, like splits, for example, splits will always end up in some type of adjustment. If you have a clean ratio that's divisible by one, so if you're looking at like a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 or a 4-for-1, et cetera, basically what happens is your position, the strike price of your position will be divided by whatever that number is, 2, 3, or 4. So let's say it's a 2-for-1 stock split. I have one contract of a 100 strike option. The strike will be divided by 2 or 3 or 4 respectively. So that'll give me a 50 strike option. And then my position will actually be multiplied by that same number. So I'll end up with 2 contracts with a 50 strike. Or if it was a 3-for-1, I'd end up with 3 contracts at a 33.33 strike, for example. So that's generally how splits that are divisible by one will have, be adjusted. But for the splits that are, say, a 3-for-2 split or some other odd ratio, they're not able to give you 1.5 contracts. We don't do fractional options yet. So basically what happens there is the strike is still adjusted. So if it's a 3-for-2, for example, your strike would still be adjusted from 100 to 66.66. But instead of getting 1.5 option contracts, you'll still have your one option contract, but then the contract multiplier will change from 100 to 150. So that means if and when you exercise your option, instead of getting only 100 shares of stock, you will now get 150 shares of stock.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I think it's really interesting for the audience to know, because we've never covered this before, how that works when it does come to stock splits and corporate actions. And I guess one final piece before we move on to talk more about Matrix is to talk about how potentially options trade around maybe the speculation or rumor of corporate actions and maybe some of the behaviors or phenomenons that happen in that space. Is there anything that you have insights or training in that regard?
Well, some interesting, there's a lot of interesting things that can happen around rumors. And I think one interesting one is, okay, a rumor of a takeover, right? So let's say a stock's trading at 50 and there's a rumor that there may be a takeover at 100. Maybe the stock rallies up to 70, 80 based on the confidence behind that rumor. We know it doesn't go all the way to 100 because that's maybe the final ultimate value possible. Definitely trades up from 50 though. One interesting thing in situations like that is that although the stock trades up to 70 or 80, what have you, the options market may do something completely different. And what the options market may do is basically price the what's called the implied distribution of the potential future underlying price changes to basically create a bimodal distribution. And essentially what that means is the general assumption is that stocks will trade in a roughly normal distribution manner. So everybody knows what a normal distribution looks like, right? In the case of a possible takeover, that may change to a bimodal distribution where you essentially have two peaks. So basically, if you look at the options market, you may see more clearly that the market thinks this thing is either going to trade at 100 or it's going to go down to 50. It's not staying at 70, 80, because some, you know, there's going to be a binary moment where we know whether or not this takeover is going to happen or it's going to fall apart. And basically, you know, they're betting that it's not going to stay at 70 to 80. It's going to go above or below while the stock is just trading at 70 or 80. So that's, I think that's a pretty interesting thing that can happen with some of the takeover rumors. With regards to dividend changes, so it really, in dividend announcements, it really just depends on whether or not it's expected or unexpected. So, you know, companies that have a strong history of maintaining a certain dividend or, you know, steady growth in their dividends, and some companies have a very strong history of never, ever cutting a dividend, things like that. If their announcement is expected, then there really won't be any dramatic changes in any option pricing. If it's unexpected, and if the share price doesn't move, basically, if there's an increase in dividends, you will see call prices decline a little bit because of the reasons we discussed before. And you see put prices increase a little bit, all, you know, all things equal, like that not impacting the underlying price. But the other hand of that, the other side of that is that if a company does announce that they're increasing their dividends, that could be viewed as being very bullish for the stock. So the stock may rally, causing the decline in call prices because of the decrease, because of the increase in the dividend, to be more than offset based on the increase in the underlying and therefore increase the call prices overall. So, you know, there's a number of different dynamics and factors at play there, but that's how it can play out at times.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting, just going back to what you were talking about with the bimodal distribution and how you can really look at the options market as kind of a probability meter, as you will, on what could be the potential outcome of certain rumors and speculation and kind of judge some decisions based upon that as well.
Yeah, it can be very interesting, and especially in series that have numerous strikes, you can really back out a pretty detailed implied probability distribution of what the options market is saying, where the possible outcomes of the stock movements are going into the future. And it just gives you, you know, a much more dynamic picture than looking at a single stock price that, hey, it's trading at 80.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can tell you're very passionate about this topic, and I think I want to move on to the next part, and I really appreciate that overview for this week's topic. So the next part of the interview, we're going to be talking about Matrix, which you are the CEO of. And so let's talk about, you know, just that history behind the founding of Matrix Executions and where you were then and where you are today.
Great. So Tony Saliba and I launched Matrix Executions just over 5 years ago. We combined some assets from a handful of entities to basically create the new entity, Matrix Executions. At the start, we had about 15 employees, most of whom are still with us today. And through a lot of effort from everyone on the team, we've quickly grown to become a pretty serious player in the worlds of equity and option executions. We now have over 50 employees, and we have grown since that first year. Since our first year, we have grown our average daily volume more than 40-fold. So it's been a pretty tremendous growth rate over the past 5 years. And, you know, the team and everyone is looking forward to continue that in the future.
Yeah, yeah, it seems really interesting. And so I want to dig in a little bit too on what we kind of already went through in the beginning, the overview of the services you provide, but could you mention those again and just the types of customers that you provide those services to as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, you know, we focus on providing best-in-class equity and options execution services out to our clients. Generally speaking, our clients are broker dealers and institutions. You know, that's to say that we don't go out to direct retail clients. To drill down one level deeper on that, so we have products and solutions that cater to buy-side firms, firms like hedge funds, proprietary trading firms, market-making firms, et cetera, and also sell-side firms such as banks, other brokers, interdealer brokers, wealth management firms, and so forth. So we provide a wide breadth of products and services that really satisfy all of those different client types. And they all have different types of flow. They all have different types of execution needs, and they all have different workflows with their various, you know, order flow paths, like how they source liquidity. Are they oversized orders? Do they need to be split up across multiple exchanges? Are they so complex that they need some type of manual handling? Do they need auto hedging, et cetera, et cetera? So we have, you know, deep capabilities to service all of those different types of order flows. A piece of that is that we do have integrations with numerous, numerous third-party platforms, both proprietary and, you know, just generally available EMS, OMS platforms and so forth that some of our clients may use. So we're currently well over 30 very deep integrations. And that's something that we continue to build on. You know, we still run into today a new prospect that's on some platform we haven't integrated with yet. And, you know, we'll bring them in, get integrated and bring them on board as well. And in addition to that, we do have, so we're very deeply integrated with third-party platforms and third-party routing systems. We do also have two front-end platforms that are Matrix products, the first of which is called Matrix Pro, and that basically caters to the buy-side clients, for the proprietary trading firm type of client, and the second of which is called Matrix Elite, which is more of a sell-side workflow or a broker workflow where they're slicing and dicing orders, sourcing liquidity, creating crosses, and so forth. So two different front ends that basically are you know, targeting very, very different types of workflows for very, very different types of clients.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think one of the biggest components, obviously, for Matrix as a technology provider is the technology. And so I just want to say congratulations to you and the team for winning Best Options Technology Provider 2023 by the Market Choice Awards. Very recent. And so to that end, let's talk about the future of Matrix and how technology moving forward, or what technologies moving forward, are going to play a big role in that future.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. You know, everyone at Matrix is super excited about that award. I think it says a lot about what we've accomplished in a relatively short period of time. And in terms of going forward, so we're continuing to expand our client base and service and satisfy new and different client types as we continue to grow and build out our product line and our integration points. We continue to deliver very robust and custom algo capabilities. So we're constantly configuring new types of algo behaviors for specific client needs to meet exactly what they're looking for. And that includes just a wide breadth of capabilities, like, you know, how aggressively you're working an order, how you're leaning on different market data points based on how you work that order, or that drive how you work that order, how you're sourcing liquidity, how you're hitting auctions and everything else. So, you know, very, very flexible, very customizable, and we're able to meet, you know, pretty much everybody's needs very easily, which is great. We also continue to expand our liquidity network for more efficient off-screen liquidity sourcing and pairing that with streamlined execution. We're right now in the process of deploying pretty advanced capabilities around flex options trading. So flex options, as I'm sure you've seen, have been growing pretty rapidly. There's a number of interesting products that are being built on top of flex options. And the way that flex options are executed today is still somewhat inefficient. So we're building a very, very streamlined workflow that includes order entry, liquidity sourcing, pricing, and then crossing and electronic execution all through a completely streamlined, you know, electronic data path, which is great. And we're very optimistic about, you know, our ability to bring on clients with that improved workflow. And we also continue to add just generally to our algo routing capabilities and integrations with various trading platforms that some of our clients or prospects may be using.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. I think we're going to have you on for another interview, or someone from the team on for another interview about options trading technology and everything that goes into it, because I think it's super interesting. It would make a great topic. But as we kind of get into the closing part of this interview, wanted to hear a little bit more about you and maybe some of the most important lessons that you've learned while working in the industry, or another way I like to rephrase this is just some advice that you would give to somebody that's looking to start in the derivatives industry. Because I think you've had an interesting career. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say.
Well, I'd say probably two of the most important lessons that I've kind of learned over my career. The first is, and this applies to everything, but it very much applies to our industry too. So it's worth saying, and I think it's very important. You never stop learning, because this is a very, very dynamic, technology-driven industry, and you really have to keep advancing in order to compete both individually and as a company. So, you know, that includes just staying on top of the most recent developments on the technology front, staying on top of the most recent product developments within our industry, you know, new exchange capabilities and so forth. Just everything. You need to continue to bring in new information so that you can make the most informed, educated decisions on what the best direction is to go. Again, both individually and for the company that you're working for. The second, and I've been very fortunate in this area, is to the best of your ability, try to surround yourself with great people. So I feel super fortunate that we have such a great team at Matrix, and that has certainly been a big driver of our success. And, you know, career paths are pretty long. So you'll run into people 10, 20 years later from when you first worked with them. And, you know, you want to maintain good relationships and continue to reach out to those people that you know are excellent, exceptional people, and try to work with them, you know, in the future to the best of your ability.
Yeah. Yeah. And Joe Corona, who John did an interview with, is a great example of that from your story earlier. So I'm really glad that you mentioned that as well. And so to kind of close out the interview, and really appreciate you taking the time to do this, we choose a topic for the show every week. So this week we talked about dividends and corporate actions effect on options pricing. What is your recommendation, or maybe just something you're curious about hearing more about in the industry that we could cover on another episode of Options Discovery?
Well, I do like your idea, Alex, about the technology side. I do think that's a great idea. Another one that I was somewhat interested in, and I think it would be good for people to hear, is a discussion about strategies on how to roll certain option positions. So, you know, imagine you have a collar or a covered call or protective put or what have you, and you really just kind of want to maintain that expiration to expiration. What are some of the optimal strategies? What should people look for determining when to roll that position, what strikes to roll that position to, what expiration to roll that position to, and just some of the pros and cons based on, you know, certain market conditions and so forth. I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic. So I appreciate that one. And I think we'll definitely do an episode on that as well. But that's all the questions I have for you today. Just want to, again, say thank you for taking the time. And hopefully we can have you or another person from the Matrix team on in the future to talk about technology.
Sounds great. Thank you, Alex. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thanks, Jordan. Bye.
If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.